Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the PPSAI Working Group call on the 11th of November, 2014. On the call today, we have Steve Metellus, Graham Bunton, Tatiana Kremstova, Chris Pelling, Theo Geert, Holly Raich, Justin Macy, Volker Grieman, Frank Michalik, John Blumenthal, Sarah Wild, David Heasley, Val Sherman, James Bladell, Christian Dawson, Michaela Nyland, Keith Cooperschmidt, and Luke Sufer. We have apologies from Darcy Southwell, Bill Corwin, Lindsay Hamilton-Reed, Karen Malin-Terubel, and Dick Leaning. From staff, we have Mary Wong, Amy Bivens, and myself, Terry Acknew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Don.
Sorry about the delay there. It's a shorter list than usual, and I was sending a chat to somebody who left the meeting. That's not nice. Okay. At any rate, we'll get started regardless. As usual, please update your SOIs if you're participating and don't have an SOI submitted. Please do so. I'm not quite sure how that works, but I was looking at the roster the other day and noticed a couple of people where there was no SOI listed. So I'm saying this just in case there still is a way to participate in the call. My text did go through, apparently. We've done some, I don't know if reshuffling is the right term, but just wanted to bring up a couple of things. We originally talked about and even scheduled presentations by Protection Authority representatives and law enforcement. That was because I think we all had agreed that, or not all, but there wasn't any argument when it was suggested that since we had not had consistent law enforcement representation and they were critical, a part of this discussion, we would have a presentation from law enforcement. After that, Dick Leaning did sign up and agreed to take a look at our preliminary conclusions and do something to kind of carry the ball forward for law enforcement. So suddenly there really was, it didn't look like there was a need for this group presentation we had talked about, because we do have the representation now, and we had it on and off with Gemma Campillos and Dan Burke. Dan formally withdrew yesterday. Gemma's still with us in name, perhaps, but now that she's a vice chair of the GAC, I really don't expect to see her again. If she thought she had a lot of work before, it's going to be worse now. So the counter that we've discussed in terms of Protection Authority having used the U.S. term equal time wasn't quite as clear. On top of that, time got very short to be able to schedule something. So we won't be doing the formal DPA or law enforcement presentations the way it showed up, the way they appeared on the schedule a few weeks ago. That does not mean that we're not interested in the protection, data protection side of things. Yeah, anybody who's worked with a few, well, I'm not gonna belabor that. It doesn't mean we're not interested in the data protection side. It's just a question of the initial reason for it kind of evaporated, and we ran into just some issues about feasibility that we won't be doing that. The good news is that's going to, we'll wind up with more time to discuss the substantive issues and get things squared away as much as we can before we start the circle back through and begin to write. Any questions or issues about the change in process? Okay, let's move forward. We talked a lot last week as part of our discussion of G, I think two things. Number one, how much we were talking about the accreditation, for lack of a better term, of a proxy privacy registrant, as opposed to de-accreditation of a service. Topic G initially was set up with the latter in mind, but very early in our discussion, somebody, I think it was James, brought up the topic of what would be required to cancel a proxy privacy registration itself. We did discuss that to some extent in F, but only in the case of disclosure. And there are other reasons to terminate a proxy privacy registration. Well, conceivably, I guess that's for the group to decide. But on our chairs call yesterday, we came up with a few possibilities. All of this is to explain why we want to focus, I think, on G today and look at the staff summary of what proxy staff summary of what registrar deaccreditation looks like and see how we can apply it. But it's the reason we it's the reason that we asked Mary to send out some of the provisions we talked about in F, because I think some of those discussions will help frame as we go forward what needs to be involved in terminating a registration. Gailey.
Hi, Donald McKay. I think you're confusing two things here. Because, I mean, the registrar deaccreditation thing, I think, was being used as a parallel for how one might deaccredit a proxy privacy service provider. There is absolutely no way on this earth the proxy privacy service providers are going to go through this entire convoluted mess just to disable the service on a single domain. Thanks.
Well, I agree with you, so I don't know where we missed connections. I was suggesting that this, what's on the screen,
I don't think you did, Don. I think this is crossed wire. I think this was meant to be an example of deaccreditation from a contract with ICANN. And that this would be, this was meant to be something to start a discussion around how one would deaccredit the proxy privacy provider, not a specific domain name. Thanks.
Okay, Michele, I'm going to respond to your point, and I would appreciate this time if you didn't interrupt. What I intended to say, and I'm sorry if it wasn't clear, that what is on the screen now is to guide our discussion of deaccreditation of proxy privacy provider, service, however you want to call it. We're resurrecting some of the things we talked about in F, plus other reasons to guide us when we do start discussing what might be involved in pulling a specific proxy privacy registration. James?
Hi, Don. Thanks. James speaking for the transcript. And maybe I have, because I have missed a couple of weeks, maybe I've missed something with the terminology. But when we talk about deaccrediting a registrant, which I think was said earlier, I'm not comfortable with that term. I would prefer cancellation of service or publication or whatever, some of the things we discussed earlier, because the phrase deaccreditation of a registrant implies not only that a particular privacy proxy customer would lose their service, but also that they would be prohibited from using the service in the future at that provider and other providers, which then implies some sort of a shared blacklist, something like that. So you see where it starts to have a ripple effect down the road by using the term deaccreditation. I think cancellation might be more descriptive of what we're looking for.
Okay, we'll use cancellation. I was not being literal when I said deaccreditation, but got to be careful with terms with this group. Okay, why don't we start looking at the summary that... Oh, Holly?
Also, just a question. The heading here is registrar determination. Are we assuming that a privacy proxy provider is a registrar, or, again, is it just... Can we clarify and say we're actually talking about determination of a privacy proxy service provider? Just a question on that one.
Holly, this is a summary of the registrar termination deaccreditation process. So we can look at it and see how we will apply it to proxy privacy
okay.
services.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mary?
Don, actually, that was what I was going to say. Essentially, this was also to refresh folks' memories, as well as for those who weren't on the call last week. The question is not so much the actual process or the steps themselves for PP providers or matching those, at least not at this point, but the questions had arisen about, what happens to registrants, what happens to their domain names when their registrar is deaccredited. So hopefully this descriptive document would be a starting point to help the working group work through those specific questions. Thanks.
Right. Yeah, I appreciate that. It's not only the circumstances for termination and deaccreditation, but it's the processes that will have to fall into place once that's done, and we do a lot of looping back, and that's going to take us back to some early discussions concerning moving privacy or proxy registration in that short time, theoretically, that the registration details will be exposed to the public. Okay. Yeah, off the top, I think that this is a, for the most part, we could adopt the registrar process, obviously changing some words, pulling out certain references. To me, the big difference, though, is this issue of transfer of the proxy registration. Stephanie?
Yes. Hi. Sorry. I think it's really helpful to have this, but there are huge differences from the perspective of the end user in transferring a domain registration and transferring the who represents you on the who is and to any legal pursuers or whatever. In other words, there is a lot more at stake for the end user here than in your average domain registration, because of the nature of the service provider. And I'm not a registrar, but I would suggest that possibly registrars can tell us how much money's at stake, too, from a profit and loss perspective. This is an enhanced service that they're providing, and most of them are charging for it, right? And in any case, once it gets accredited, they're sure as heck going to want to charge for it because of the additional burden. So I think, I'm not quibbling about this. Clearly is a model that we could start from, but we're going to have to do quite a bit of work on it, I would suspect. That's just all the point I wanted to make.
Thanks. Steve?
Thanks. Steve Metalitz here. I guess one question I would have about this, I would agree with you, Don, that this is a good model, and it might be, the basis for how this would be handled with respect to accredited proxy providers. But I wonder, because in all of the registrars that have been de-accredited, and this does a good job of explaining that process and what happens with the registrations, surely some of those registrations have been proxy registrations. And so I just wonder if the scenario that Stephanie's talking about has already occurred, because when the registrar has its contract, when the registrar is de-accredited and its registrations are transferred to another registrar, that includes registrations for which there is not accurate data in who is, but instead there is proxy data. So I'm not sure whether a problem has arisen in that circumstance or not, but it would be worth asking compliance and the people who drew up this report whether any of these terminations of accredited registrars have involved proxy registrations. Thank you.
Excellent point. It would make our life a lot easier if we just didn't confront it. Volker?
Hello, Professor Vannon speaking. Just one comment to what Steve just said. Steve characterized privacy proxy data as not being correct data. I would take objection to that. That is correct data.
Okay. Well, let me ask this. Does anybody see anything in the in the summary we have here, of the links that folks have followed, that suggests we could not pretty much adopt the provisions of registrar termination and deaccreditation? And that the work waiting for, the only work really left to us, is this issue involved, the extra important issues involved with potential, however temporary, reveal of data, of information. I think there are going to be some practical issues we'll run into. No, I'm thinking ahead of myself. Never mind. Okay. Why don't we, I'm not sure I follow Stephanie, what do you mean? Oh, okay, now I understand. All right, I think what I'm hearing, or not hearing, is that we can pretty well go with the registrar provisions, adapting them to the existing registrar provisions, adapting them to proxy privacy. But now we do need to talk about any other safeguards we need to recommend in terms of protecting proxy privacy registrants in the termination and deaccreditation process. Can I have somebody kind of lead that off? Stephanie?
Sorry, Don, just an old hand.
Oh, no, I was, your hand's not up. I was trying to drag you in here. Now, you know, I'd like to really start building out the discussion of the issues that proxy privacy deaccreditation are going to raise that don't exist with just registrar deaccreditation. And I just wanted to see if you want to start building that out a bit. Because early on, I remember you had some thoughts on that when the issue came up in the first couple of months we were at work here.
So your specific question is I'm sorry, we've been going back and forth in the chat because proof of transmission of the message has to make sure that it doesn't include the IP address or any other identifiers. Someone had asked whether an IP address was considered personal information from the perspective of at least the European data commissioners, and the answer to that is yes. And I believe that would be the answer in Canada as well. So our recent Supreme Court decision, that's been pretty well short up, but what you're really asking is questions about the transfer in cases of deaccreditation of the registrar. Yes.
In cases of deaccreditation of the registry of the proxy privacy service.
Yeah. Safeguards
do we need to be building in?
And it's not clear, although this was really helpful in understanding what's going on. I think it's a hugely different process because my relationship with my proxy is quite different. And depending on where the recommendations of the EWG report go, and one has to kind of try to have a helicopter view of what's going on at ICANN, I find, that relationship is critical. And so there are questions that I, as a registrant, would like answered. What jurisdiction are they in? What roles are they taking on, and how do they manage those roles? So if they are going to be my legal representative, jurisdiction matters a lot. These are the kinds of questions I think we need to kind of tease out, and maybe they can just be plunked into the transfer process. And in this respect, I don't think you can just select from a group of pre-accredited proxy service providers because of the range of services. I mean, possibly you could spec out all of the services and then have a list of the guys who provide this, and this service and have a sublist, but I think it's probably more like a tendering proposition. And then again, the registrants will probably be, depending on how complex this gets, selecting different tiers of service. So it's just a lot harder than a straight transfer between registrars.
Agreed. What do you mean by tiers of service?
What I mean by tiers of services is if you read the EWG report, the way to avoid having your personal data appear in the directory is to hire a privacy proxy service. And you might select to make different contact points available in the RDS. And I realize these recommendations haven't been brought in yet, but it's the most complete analysis to date of how these particular contact points would be teased out. So I'm referring to them. If this comes to pass, then, you know, I might only use them for technical. I might only use them for legal. Or I might use them for every single contact, every single thing that someone would want to reach me for. I might pay them to filter out annoying attempts to buy my domain name. So all of those are different. And somebody else going to the same proxy service provider might want to handle their own technical stuff and just only want them for legal. You see what I mean? You'll have different tiers of service. One function, three functions, two.
Okay, let me toss this out generally. Can this discussion be about proxy privacy models that don't exist yet?
Sully?
Just a thought, Stephanie. I thought the road we were going down here is to describe simply the basics. So what we're talking about is a required one level, and then individual providers can provide, I suppose, add-ons or whatever, rather than us trying to mandate different so-called levels of service so that we don't have a description. We have a description of what has to happen for accreditation and then leave it up to individual providers to add those layers rather than trying to take into account what individual layers might be. It may make it easier, but I'm not sure. Thank you.
Stephanie?
I agree, Holly. In terms of us accrediting, we just accredit, and they offer the services they want. The problem becomes if the who is changed and certain data becomes available and the user has to select which particular services they've selected, then the transfer becomes extremely important. If the first guy on the list of accredited privacy proxy service providers does not offer the service that I went to, I don't know, Volker for, then as a customer, I'm not happy. In other words, it's a much more complex thing. You have to figure out what the registrant was purchasing and make sure that the guy you're handing them over to provides the same level of service. Sorry to keep feeding this, but...
Okay, well, let me just... Again, I'm not sure that these levels of service you're talking about generally exist now in the current models of privacy proxy. And we also, as Steve pointed out in the chat, we have a specific definition in our terms of reference. And it sounds like what we're talking about here might be a bit different from that. Holly?
Just a response to Stephanie. I absolutely agree with you. We haven't resolved the transfer issue at all. But I think transfer is something separate to presuming that we're going to mandate levels of service as opposed to some basic requirements which have to be met and then additional aspects to it can be added or not depending on the wishes of the individual provider. Thank you.
Thanks. McKaylee?
Thanks, Don. trying to follow this kind of train of thought from Stephanie. So I think Stephanie's concern is if a proxy privacy provider or the registrar or both become de-accredited, then that could cause issues for the user of their services, if I've understood her correctly. And I kind of see that as being a kind of a non-issue in some respects. I mean, it is an issue that needs to be addressed. But if you're to use the same kind of de-accreditation process for a proxy privacy provider as there is for a registrar, then it's not like a de-accreditation like kind of happens magically from one day to the next. So if, for example, let's say that, you know, Company X is going to lose their accreditation. I mean, normally there's breach notices and everything else anyway to begin with, so I assume that for proxy privacy, the same thing would happen. And if you're aware of these breach notices and everything, then maybe you should move provider before they lose their accreditation. But then when there is an entire kind of process around the migration of the domain names, in that case for registrar, to another registrar, and there's various other options there. So maybe it's simply a matter of covering that off in any de-accreditation process that might exist for a proxy privacy provider. Thanks.
Thanks. I'm going to go on mute for a second here while this phone's ringing. Mary?
Thanks, Don. Hi, everybody. This is Mary from ICANN staff again. So listening to everybody and trying to figure out a potential way forward, you know, one of the things that we probably need to bear in mind, besides what Michele said earlier about, you know, domain names and their transfers being very different from a PP registration in and of itself, and the accreditation, de-accreditation of a registrar and a PP provider not necessarily being the same entity or the same thing, I think the road that we're going down now may be helpful, and it may be additionally helpful if the group in thinking through this particular issue were to identify, you know, the specific problem. And it seems to me, for example, that what we're talking about now is, you know, ensuring protection for the registrants in the event of a transfer of their PP registrations, for example. The issue there, though, is that one huge difference with the registrar de-accreditation process among several is that the accreditation process for registrars is governed by a consensus policy, which is the IRTP or the various IRTPs. So at this point, it's hard to envisage a bulk transfer happening in the same way. As we've also said earlier, you know, it is not within the remit of this working group to, you know, alter or suggest alterations to the IRTP. What we can do, like I said, is identify the specific problems and suggest recommendations that might, be relevant in the implementation process, like look at certain aspects of what happens under the IRTP. Would that be helpful? More as a general principle, rather than create a new policy, although we can obviously also recommend that in, you know, future reviews of certain policies, it may be a good thing to look at, again, assuming that the specific problems are identified and documented in our report.
Okay, appreciate that. Well, I've heard some specific, Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve Metalitz. Maybe one way to approach this is to say, you know, we think that the existing termination processes and de-accreditation processes for registrars provide a good template, but that ICANN would need to identify whether any additional safeguards would be needed because of the differing nature of the services that are involved. In one case, registration services, in another case, privacy proxy services. I'm not sure we could get too much deeper than that, but simply to point that out. This is a good model. It may need some adaptation because of the different services involved.
I was going in somewhat the same direction until I saw your hand up there. Are there a couple specific things that we could add on that need to be considered, even if we can't be too specific? And I've heard suggestion that for added protection, I think I've heard suggestions for added protection, maybe proxy privacy registrants should be notified when there's a breach notice so that they can make advance arrangements. possibly suggest that and I'm not clear enough on the process by which registrations are transferred in the event of a termination, but that there be provisions in place that give proxy privacy registrants some choice, or that would require that ICANN be a little, ICANN develop some different guidelines that take the requirements of proxy privacy into consideration. Michele?
Thanks, Don. Michele, for the record. No, just on this thing about the transfer of domains when a registrar is deaccredited, I'm sure some of the registrars on this call have already gone through this process, but I suspect the rest of you probably haven't. I mean, you're probably aware that it exists, but you probably have never actually gone through the process. I mean, at a high level, this entire thing came about as a result of the RegisterFly implosion several years ago. Prior to RegisterFly, there had been no simple way to do a lot of these things, plus there probably wasn't any real requirement. What happens now is that when a registrar is going to be deaccredited, ICANN will put out a call to other registrars asking if anybody is interested in taking over the names. You'd get a certain amount of information about, you know, which registrar in question is being deaccredited, and possibly some information about the kind of registrations they have, the TLDs and the volume of registrations involved. As Frank is saying on the chat, I mean, typically you'd want the domains and the registrations and everything to go to a registrar who has a similar kind of business model. So it wouldn't make a lot of sense, say, to move the domain registrations from a retail registrar to a reseller-based registrar, or from a retail registrar to a brand registrar. That wouldn't make much sense. As part of the process, what's meant to happen is that the gaining registrar is given the data escrow, which would probably be with Iron Mountain. So that would be the domain registration data, so that you can populate your whois and everything else. And the registries would be informed that, you know, registrar X with IANA ID Y is being deaccredited, and registrar Z is taking up the accreditations and will basically move all the domains across. That's the idea in theory, anyway. In terms of notification and everything else, generally speaking, there's plenty of notification. I mean, there's usually a process during the deaccreditation of a registrar where the registrar who's losing their accreditation has the option to find their own solution, as in to find a registrar who would take on the name. So with a privacy proxy, I can't see any reason why that would be different. In terms of information and everything, all of this is published on the ICANN website. The gaining registrar would also have probably put up something on their site, a specific page with information for the affected clients. Hopefully that kind of gives people some flavor. Other people may have more details. Thanks.
I appreciate that. That's really helpful in filling in some of the blanks, at least I had as of 2 minutes ago. Susan?
Michele, I was just wondering how much notice goes to each registrant. Would you have any idea on that?
Susan, Michele speaking for the record. The ICANN doesn't contact registrants directly ever, so that's really a matter of the gaining registrar doing their best to communicate as effectively as possible. I mean, when we did it one time, we've only done it once, and that was involving a registrar whose primary market was Ireland. So in that case, I mean, we did press releases and everything else, you know, we've gained this, blah, blah, blah. So a lot, most people would have known fairly quickly. I mean, the problem, I suppose, is, you know, if there's a serious issue with the service provider, be that a registrar or a privacy proxy provider, whether or not, I think it's, how do I put this? I'd say it's more down to the gaining company to look after those communications and ICANN rather than the entity who's being deaccredited, because, I mean, assuming that there's a serious issue with the entity being deaccredited, and, you know, they're probably going out of business, I can't see looking after their former clients being too high up on their priority list. I mean, it depends, obviously, but, you know, I wouldn't count on it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Very educational. I appreciate it. And given what Kaylee just said, and what Frank put in the chat, I'm wondering how much we would have to add. Specifically, since it looks like there are already provisions for similar offerings, we would just have to maybe suggest some of the elements to take into consideration. That differentiate privacy proxy from just a privacy proxy registrant being transferred from just a registrant being transferred. Privacy proxy registration being transferred, that's what I wanted. From a, for lack of a better term, normal registration being transferred. And I know what the holes are in saying normal registration. I would like to take a few minutes on the issue of registration cancellation. But I want to offer the chance for any other points on this discussion. I mean, I'm hoping when we put things into the template. And,
Donis Michele, just very quickly, just one last thing on this. One of the potential reasons for a registrar being deaccredited would be for lack of them depositing data with the third-party escrow agent. I mean, it's pretty high up in the kind of, oh, my God, that's really serious reasons for breach. The quality of the data that the gaining company will have access to can vary a lot. So just something to bear in mind. I mean, ultimately, you can write the best policy in the world, but if the data isn't there, if the underlying data isn't there, or hasn't been backed up, or you don't have access to it, you're kind of snookered. Not sure if that term travels across the Atlantic. It's a bit of a catch-22 to try and use a term that has traveled across the Atlantic. Thanks.
It transfers very well, although I can think of some others that would probably pop to mind and go over here more quickly, but wouldn't be appropriate on a conference call. Okay. The chat's getting a little strange here. We did talk in the course of a discussion in F about cancellation of a registration, which kind of is the de facto result of a publication. But I think we should take some time describing other situations that might lead to, or that we should say should lead to cancellation of a registration, of a proxy privacy registration. And then the other issue, and this goes way back when, in our conversations, I want to re-raise the question of whether a proxy privacy registrant who's faced with publication should have the option of terminating the registration entirely before that happens.
John, this is James. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm having difficulty hearing you.
All right. Is this any better?
Slightly. It may be just me, I suppose, but...
Thanks for the qualification, McKaylee. Okay, I'll fiddle with the mic position a little bit, but it seems like other folks haven't raised issues. What else can we put? I mean, I would imagine, just as one idea, and again, this goes back to earlier conversations, if any kind of verification fails, would that be cause for termination, Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve Metalitz. I'm not quite clear on what you use the term cancellation of registration. Are you really talking about cancellation of privacy proxy service to an individual customer, or are you talking about cancellation of their domain name registration?
Well, the privacy proxy wouldn't be in a position. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the latter can only be done by a registrar.
Correct. So no, I'm talking about cancellation of the privacy proxy registration.
Okay. So I think Mary, when Mary sent around the agenda today, she had 4 points of what we've already preliminarily concluded, and some of them go to this question, which is basically that the provider has to disclose to the customer the circumstances under which their proxy service or privacy service would be canceled. I think that's kind of where we are now. So are you asking whether there would be other restrictions or other conditions on when the service could be canceled? Is that kind of the question you're posing now?
I think basically what I'm suggesting is should we have some baseline requirements, or should we just leave it to terms of the published terms of service and up to the privacy proxy provider to decide what will lead to cancellation of the privacy proxy registration? Being very careful there. I don't know if we need to add anything specific, but we've gone into discussion fairly deeply in terms of, we did deal even if indirectly with the issues in detail during a discussion of that, so I wanted to at least throw it out there to see if we should put similar amount of time into other possible things that would cause loss of privacy proxy protection, and I'm deliberately phrasing it differently there. Okay. Maybe the terms of service angle is sufficient. Angle's not the right word. The terms of service approach is the right way to go and not be any more specific. Okay, I like the easy ones. I deliberately diverted the conversation, so I made sure we covered these issues, or covered what turned out not to be an issue, I guess. Stephanie?
I'm just wondering if there is some way that a registrant could have an opportunity when buying a privacy proxy service from an accredited registrar to put some kind of stipulation on the file as to what happened in the event of deaccreditation of the registrar. And usually in all these arrangements, they're lean on customer rights and pretty thick on company rights, right? But so, for instance, if I'm doing something, let's say I'm running a website that talks about Nazis, which is legal in the United States and in Canada, but definitely illegal in Germany, right? So I would have a caveat in there that in the case that my privacy proxy service provider, say, TwoCows, goes belly up and I get transferred, I am definitely not going to this or that jurisdiction. The same would be true in any political website. You know, you don't want to get transferred over to the place you're fleeing. That's just an easy example, but I'm not aware of any specs on the service provider contract, and maybe that's outside our remit, but I don't think it's covered on the 4 bits here, you know. If you happen to be away on a world's cruise while your service provider goes down, you could be in trouble by the time you get home.
Yes, I assume you're pointing out TwoCows specifically, didn't mean anything. James?
Hi, Don. Thanks, James, speaking for the record. And just to respond to Stephanie and some of her points. I mean, normally I agree we should be looking out for the concerns of the registrant, but I think that getting too granular into giving control over what is going to happen in those scenarios and handing that over to individual registrants becomes problematic when you have millions of them. And hopefully we wouldn't see the providers of that size going belly up, but it's something that we should, you know, we have to build a one-size-fits-all program. So I again, favor guidelines that leave discretion for the service providers. However, I think it is important for the service providers to make those available, either through their terms of service or somewhere on their website, so that the registrant can make an informed decision on which service provider they choose based on how they're going to be. But I don't think the registrant should have that level of granular control, because I mean, let's be honest, these services range from $9 a year down to free. It'd be very difficult to build a custom service plan for millions of individual users. I think that there are other options for folks who are that concerned about their privacy, either by they can set up a legal entities, or they can hire attorneys, or they can take other, albeit more involved and more expensive routes. I would consider this, what we're talking about here, to be more of an entry level or basic service that is not going to guard against some of those extreme examples. Thanks.
Yeah, I see what you mean. In terms of service, we suggested using those for a lot of the issues we've addressed. Just toss this out. Could the type of situation Stephanie raised there just be among the examples we write up in a report when we suggest that I can when I can design the processes for dealing with the accredited proxy privacy services. Just it would be one of the examples for suggesting that there are they may be different considerations in that as opposed to just registrar failures. Mm-hmm. I hope that came out clearly because I got confused. It's an example of the different issues that will arise when a privacy proxy is deaccredited versus when a registrar is deaccredited. That's what I was trying to say. McKaylee?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. McKaylee for the record. Just backing up exactly what James was saying, because I tend to agree with him, not all the time, but a lot of the time. Things like, the choice between which provider to use for a particular service, these really need to be issues that the market decides. Providers of who is privacy, proxy, whatever you want to call it, will vary in price to the consumer from zero all the way upwards to, I'm not even sure what the upper end of the scale is, but it's probably significantly higher. And it's like anything else. There's different companies out there that offer different levels of service, different terms of service. And while a proxy privacy accreditation process and policy could determine things at a high level, you don't want to end up in a situation where ICANN is getting in the way of market forces and getting in the way of consumer choice. I thought ICANN's remit was to actually provide choice as opposed to forcing it. So, there's plenty of third parties who look after, doing reviews and comparisons of different companies and how well they operate. I think it was the EFF were doing some kind of transparency comparison thing there even last week. So I think just, leave it up to the market to decide. Thanks.
I appreciate that. That's, I think, certainly the model we've taken for the most part by focusing on terms of service. I don't have a clock on my screen here. Well, my cell phone says we're at 10:59. So let me give anybody a chance who wants to weigh in. Wait a second for Holly to finish typing, and I think we can close for today. I've got it, Holly. We've just spoken about notice in a couple different contexts. I think once we get the notes put together on today, I think we did I think today was very productive on G and wrapping up the first pass on it. Certainly subject to notes, to the notes going out and letting people who weren't on the call weigh in. As always, follow-ups are welcomed in email. Keep the discussion going in between weeks. I think that takes care of it for today. I appreciate your time and contributions.
Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, bye.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, everyone.
Once again, the meeting has concluded. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines. Have a great rest of your day. Andre, if you can please stop the recording.